Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today.
All right, welcome to the Class Racing Podcast, number 14. And this week we have with us guest superstar Paul Wong.
Also known as the Chinaman.
Welcome, Paul.
Thank you for having me again.
We got Indy coming up in 2 weeks here, the big go, as many people call it. And we figured no better person to have on here but Paul Wong to kind of discuss that. And also, you know, a lot of the other things we got going on. We've had a couple big weeks here on the class racing scene, so we definitely want to dive into all of the hot topics. So let's start off, Charlie, with who are the hottest drivers over the last couple weeks in stock and super stock racing?
I think right now you got to put Knutson up there. I mean, he went to Topeka, won a points meet, came to Indy, Brainerd won that. So he's got a points meet win, the national event win, and basically 3 weeks' time. I'm not going to say came out of nowhere, but put up two really good performances in three races. So I'd say he's kind of hot right now. Spear getting to the finals in both stock and super stock, you know, that's not an easy task, even though those guys live up there and they race in that place all the time. Still not an easy task.
Yeah,
I mean, the two right now, because we haven't had any real Western swings over, you know, getting ready for Indy. Those are kind of the two guys right now, just because of the time frame we've only had. Basically Division 5 races and, you know, one Division 1 race in the past 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. I would definitely agree with your two picks. I mean, you know, the amount of people that have doubled up at a NHRA national event is pretty short. And for Brett Spear to even have a chance at doing that and to pull off one of the two wins, I'd say, is definitely a great feat. I would say Jody Lang is starting to heat up a little bit on the West Coast. I've seen him slowly kind of move up the points totals with the Western Swing and Seattle points meet last weekend. Another, I'm going to mention one more person on the East Coast here, but Steve Camella. I believe this was his second final of the year in Superstock
on
the Mini car.
Yeah, he had a final round earlier in the year. I think he went to the semis or deep at a couple other races. I think he's in the top 10 right now, so he's having a real good year with that AH car.
Yeah, that's not the best bracket car in the world, I don't think. And but he's a heck of a driver, and I know this is at least his second final, if not more. And I'm going to say he's pulled into the top 10 and looked a pretty good D1. So I want to bring him up. How about you, Paul? You got anybody to add to that list?
I really can't agree more with some of those choices. I mean, Jody drove wheels off his car. I mean, coming to, just like Brett Spear, a few finals. That's impressive in its own right. Chris Knutson, though, that was really – I was impressed. I mean, the solid string of 20 or better lights and several double O's at Brainerd alone. I mean, he's driving the wheels off that car. I got to give him all the credit in the world that he's taking out some big hitters. And, I mean, he's definitely earned it. There was no freebies looking at his driving at Brainerd. I mean, he earned every round by round. So I can't agree more with those than Steve Camella. That, like I said, that is not a bracket car. That is anytime Hemi Darter Barracuda can get to a final, it's impressive. Those things are fairly ragged, and they're impressive that they can go that many rounds.
Yeah, you know, the other person I just thought about is, you got to throw in there, is Jason DeForest. He had some engine trouble earlier in the year, but he also went back-to-back final rounds, you know, winning the points meet at Brainerd and then getting to the final round of Superstock. So now that he's got his engine pretty much figured out, I think he's the guy that could sneak up. You know, I know they go out west a lot, him and his old man, at the end of the year. He's won Vegas a couple times. He does good at Earlville. He's a guy that could sneak in there in the second half of the year and with people not really paying attention to them.
Okay, so with that out of the way, and I think that was a great list of names. Just to add one more thing here, we got Joe Santangelo, still with a pretty solid lead in stock and super stock national points. So, you know, the top 10's shifted around a little bit with some other guys kind of jumping up in there. I know Jody Lang made a pretty big move, and he's up to number 2. Slate Cummings and stock still holding strong at 3. And Chris Chaney up to 4 with some of the D5 races that happened. Allison Dahl also moved in the top 10 at number 7 as the East Coast D1 races are kind of going. So, you know, for Joe to – he's really led stock and super stock for, I'd say, 4, 5, 6 weeks now in both. And nobody's really made a big charge at him. So, you know, he hasn't won anything last couple weeks. He's been racing a lot, but, hey, he's still leading it. So I've got to give him some props for that.
Yeah, Joe Santangelo had a really solid middle of the year, May to July. I mean, he cleaned up quite a bit there, and that is what's keeping him at the top there. His super stock number is pretty strong. We'll see if that can hold up or not. But stock, I'm pretty sure that I believe somebody will go around that number, but there's a good chance he'll improve yet too. So we'll have to just keep an eye on that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so next thing we want to talk about is Brainerd, and I figure we'll have Charlie kind of lead this discussion as you made the, I think you said, what, 800-mile trip from Dundee, Michigan to Brainerd, Minnesota. So, Charlie, what happened? What's the scoop?
You know, went up to Brainerd, you know, Brad and myself, his dad, went up there for the points meet and the national event. You know, that place has changed. You know, the owner that had it, he's passed away over the accident here in the springtime or winter, whenever that was. But it's not a racer-friendly track. There's a lot of complaining up there out of the racers. You know, a lot of that track's really a nickel-and-dime track for the racers. You know, trying to charge, you know, $10 for a golf cart pass when you get in there, even though none of the other tracks do it. You know, Sunday night, guys are trying to get packed up. Some guys had won. Sean Vincent won comp. They were kind of in their pits having a little party. And, you know, the track guy comes in there and wants to charge them $15 to camp there overnight. You know, when it says on the thing, you know, you don't have to pay unless you're staying Monday and Tuesday. There was a couple people actually almost got in spite of the security guard over, you know, paying the $15 because it was just everybody's just kind of wore out from that place, you know, $5 here, $10 here, you know. The racers used to be able to get into the zoo. Now it's $35 if you want to go over there. At the national event, I know a lot of the guys in the comp pits, you know, there were people running around in the middle of the night, you know, from the zoo over there because one of the gates, there wasn't a security guard at it. It was 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I know Jim Greenheck, you know, he let the NHRA guys have it. I think it was Friday morning or Saturday morning because at 3-4 o'clock, there were people banging around and going through his pits and, you know, they, at the national event, you know, they closed down the ticket area, you know, where you get your credentials and stuff at 5. So a couple guys came in, their motorhomes were in the track and they went to the gate. They had their event tickets and the gate personnel said, well, we can't let you in because you didn't get here by 5 to get your car pass. And they said, well, what do you mean? Our rigs are in there. We left them from the points meet. And they said, oh, well, you have to get them 8 o'clock in the morning. So you have to pay, you know, $35. You can sleep in your car in the parking lot. You know, I know Bob Sherwood had to do that from comp. Somebody else, a couple people just kind of blew the gate and went in. That was a little bit of an issue. The police were involved. It's become a really unfriendly, you know, track to the sportsman racer. I hadn't been up there in 4 or 5 years. It wasn't that bad, but, you know, even the crew out of Minnesota that runs there, you know, the Lions, Futar, you know, those guys, that's kind of their home track, and they're pretty fed up with it, it sounds like. If it wasn't for the closest national event, I don't know if those guys would come back to it. So it just really sucks. A lot of people like going to that place. It's a neat place, but everybody's just tired of getting nickel and dime there. You know, and then the zoo people coming through and going through the pits and guys having to lock stuff up, and there were some coolers that were stolen in the middle of the night and some other stuff. So it's there's just a lot of complaining by the sportsman racers at the national event and the points meet, you know, over the $15 to park, you know, when other guys were leaving their rigs there. And no fee, and it's just kind of a cluster.
Now, I haven't been there in a couple of years, but that, to me, was a really neat race to go to, you know, and letting us into the zoo and, you know, seeing that whole circus. It's such an eccentric group of race cars up there. It's just a different vibe all the way around. And to ruin that seems like that's a bad deal. You know, I don't, you know, getting back into the quotas, I mean, racers, they don't let a lot of people in, which kind of, that hurts the variety a little bit too. But to kill the vibe of that race is a really bad deal on the owner's part, because that place always had, it always just had a great feel to it. It seemed like a really sportsman-friendly place. I mean, even as little, I was there a couple years ago, and it's a fun place, and it should stay that way, and they shouldn't burn people out on it. But, you know, you burn people out on it, and they quit going, and that's what will happen.
Yeah, I know Jason Line walked around, I think it was Sunday morning, with one of the NHRA officials, and they stopped by a couple of the stocker guys. We were standing there, and everybody kind of said the same thing I had just said. And the NHRA guy looked at him like, you know, he was speechless. He didn't know what to say, didn't know how to, you know, say it, and he kind of just walked away. And we all looked at each other like, yep, you know, just another, you know, meet and greet that means nothing as usual. So
yeah, for sure. So it's, I've never, you know, had the pleasure to go up there. I always kind of wanted to, but it's actually $35 just to get into the zoo to hang out per person.
Yeah, it used to be if you had a national event entry, you know, you could get over there. And then about, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, they just decided, you know, we're going to charge the racers because we charge them for everything up there. That's just kind of the way that facility's been run the last 4 or 5 years. So a lot of guys have just said, screw it. And I'm pretty sure maybe a third of the racers went over to the zoo on the sportsman side. I guess if you got a hard card, you could get over there without a pass. But as far as just general admission sportsman guys, you had to pay $35 to get over there.
Now let me ask you this, Paul and Charlie, since you guys have both been there. Is the zoo as crazy as it is represented as?
No, I mean, it depends on what you compare it to. If you compare it to, like, you know, 2007, no. It's still pretty crazy, but it's not near like it was 10, 15 years ago when we first went up there. It's still pretty wild, and it's still, there's nothing like it, but it's not anything like it was 10, 15 years ago, in my opinion.
Yeah. The parade of off the wall vehicles and things, you know, it, some of these races have lost, you know, like I said, it, the one that's sad that comes to mind is like Bell Rose. That race had such a great feel, and they started to treat the racers differently. And as that Cajun Sports Nationals just seemed to lose its luster, you know, with the way the situation went down there, Brainerd seems to be going down that same path. But the zoo is definitely experienced when I was there. I mean, it's got its Mardi Gras type of parade of really off-the-wall, I don't even know how to say it, but they're crafted vehicles in a way that there's some pretty wild stuff driving around, you know, morphed, you know, something. They made a trash can and put an engine on it or whatever. It's pretty nuts.
How would you say it compares, Charlie, to like Grand Bend or Toronto Motorsports Park back in the IHRA National Event days? That was always a pretty crazy party scene with the Canadian fans.
I would say it's similar to that. It's a different kind of party. I mean, the Toronto, those people were crazy, but they didn't have like vehicles riding around. I mean, there's a parade of vehicles at Brainerd, and it's everything from, you know, lawnmower powered tables to, you know, guys took a Suburban and cut the roof off it and then, you know, carried a single axle trailer with a hot tub in it. I mean, so it's they're both crazy in their representative, what's the word I'm looking for, in aspects. You know, the Canadians, they were crazy, but the Canadians, they just kind of got drunk and passed out wherever they partied.
These guys,
at Brainerd, man, they partied for 4 days. It's just, it never stops all day. Doesn't matter if it's 7 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning or 2 in the afternoon. There's a chain of, you know, 40, 50 vehicles in a conga line throughout that whole thing.
Now, is this mostly like a sausage fest, or is there some of both sexes there?
I would say it's probably 80-20 on the sausage. There's a lot of sausage there. We'll leave it at that.
All right.
It's sausage heavy.
Yeah, I just try to open you up and give you softball questions, Charlie, to get your true inner Charlie out.
Hey, I just call him as I see him. I mean, you are in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota. I don't know how much you're going to draw up there. not to knock it, but it's in the middle of nowhere.
I've heard, though, it's a beautiful place, a lot of lakes, a lot of cool stuff.
Oh, the lakes are beautiful. We went fishing one day. I mean, lakes are clear, beautiful. Caught some walleye. So we've always – their lakes up there are beautiful. They're cold. I think the guide we were with one day said it was 73 degrees on Gall Lake, I think.
And wow, it's pretty cold.
So I didn't hop in and swim to confirm, but I just took his word.
All right, well, with the zoo and everything else going on, the bad treatment of the racers, there was obviously some racing that went on too. It looks like some pretty good racing.
Yep.
We touched on this a little bit earlier, but, you know, obviously we talked about Brett Spear making it to both finals. He was able to get it done in Superstock over Jason DeForest. You know, very close race. Looks like Jason had him on the tree a little bit, 24 to 32. And ended up taking 400 or 500 stripe and broke out by 11th out. Looks like Brett probably dumped a little bit to be two over. But excellent race in the final. Brett and Jason were definitely very good the last few rounds as it came down. Some of the other racers that kind of went deep in Superstock, Dan's Rust in the GT Hemi car. He still has that car, I think, right, Charlie?
Yeah, it was. I think it's a Hemi car. They put them in GTAA. I think it's less horsepower and it's a dime better on the index. I think it's basically an AH car.
Yeah, but he went to the semis. He's done pretty well up there, I know, in the past years. Wyatt Wagner went deep. Santangelo made it to round four, so kind of back to him having a solid year. And when he lost to Brett, he was 27 one over. So, you know, pretty solid there for the loss. And Tyler B, Division III guy, lost to DeForest in round four. So he's obviously doing well as well.
You know, don't forget, you know, Tyler B also run it up in Super Comp up there. So Tyler B had two cars, you know, on Sunday, you know, at four. So that's a pretty impressive deal, too, going from Super Comp, getting to the finals, and then getting down to four cars in Super Stock, you know, just him and Dilly there. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So just wanted to touch on that. And then in Stock Eliminator, let's see here. Charlie did not make a late round finish here, unfortunately.
Like a Tory Ghost Rider, we had a dialing issue. Me and my sidekick, we didn't dial for the win, and that was a giant bite in the ass for me. But
Brad didn't have his Porter Tree weather system dialed in, right?
Well, we did. We just didn't adjust for the wind. So you'll have that in small operations like ours.
But, yeah, Charlie, second round exit, I know. And Chris Knudsen was 002 in the final, one above to defeat Brett. Looks like he missed the tree a little bit. It was 40 and 100th under for the breakout. And in the semis, we had Liner and also a Line family member.
Yeah, Lance's daughter getting, I think, her first national event semifinal.
She's
got a couple
pretty good
beats on the way too. I know she had a heads up first round where she was a pretty severe underdog according to the qualifying sheet, and actually I believe won on a hole shot.
Yeah, 2/10 on the tree she left the starting line with. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Nice. And I know in round four she took out Tyler Wodarski, who's obviously solid D5 guy out there. So yeah, great race for her. So, okay. Gary Stennett won Super Comp over Tyler B., another guy that has spent a lot of time in Superstock, so congrats to him.
Did you guys happen to see in Super Gas where the girl with the Vega almost hit a guy? They took off, and the guy ran out from behind the tree, was doing something with the electronic stuff, and about got ran over? I think it was first or second round of Super Gas.
No, I missed that.
Yeah, I think her name was Brianna, something with an R. She's got like a red... like a Vega or something like that, super gas car out of Division 5. And she basically looked like she let off the trans brake, and all of a sudden there was a guy right in front of her running across, jumping over the guardrail.
So, really?
They had to go back and rerun that. Actually, she got to the finish line, I guess, into the tower, you know, because she had lifted, and she got down there, and people didn't believe her, and then luckily they went back to the videotape, you know, because they got all that live timing and what do they call that now, NHRA TV or whatever it is this week, and they replayed her run, and you can see this guy right at the bottom, you know, her tree comes down, all of a sudden this guy just jets out from behind it and jumps over the guardrail.
Wow, no, I definitely missed that.
So,
Super Gas is kind of notable, too. I mean, Bo Butner's second race in this Super Gas car that he's bought. And I know he's got a fleet of really good people helping him dial that car and get that car zeroed in. But his second final in two races, that just speaks for itself. I mean, it's with the time I watched him jump in a Super Street car at Columbus and win that race. It's just one of those things that he's just kind of a natural shoe. You know, I get he's got some good help and great equipment, but to just pop in and tee off on people like that, that's pretty impressive.
Oh, heck yeah.
I agree.
For sure. All right, so wanted to next touch on Bowling Green. So we got Bowling Green coming up this weekend. And for the first time in, well, I guess it wasn't too bad last year, but the first time in many years, the forecast is not crazy hot like usual. It's,
yeah,
low
80s with
low 80s,
high 60s in the morning. That's unbelievable for Bowling Green.
Yeah, so
I mean,
you know,
first time I went there, I remember hiding in the bathroom because it was 100 degrees
and
95% humidity.
It'll be interesting because it'll give people a lot of false security. There'll be a lot of people that'll make good runs down there, you know, 95 or a second under, and they'll feel like they're going to be in at Indy with no problems, and they're going to show up at Indy, and even if the weather's good at Indy, they're going to drop off at time. We've seen that time and time again, especially if the weather's good at Bowling Green, because Bowling Green's a little bit closer to sea level, and then you get that 70-degree air instead of 90-degree air. I mean, you could see some really good numbers out of Bowling Green if that weather forecast holds true.
The same
thing with Indy. You know, right now they're calling for, you know, high 50s, low 60s Thursday morning, you know, at 7, 8 o'clock. I mean, you get some of the guys that make the first 20, 30 pair. If you get some 50-degree weather at Indy, you know, even though it is slow, there'll be some good numbers there early Thursday morning.
Yeah, they're still going to leave a nickel at Bowling Green, no matter how they slice it, though.
Oh, more than that, I think.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I went to, you know, I've not gone to Indy every year like you guys, but I've gone a few times, and the one morning, I was on the edge with my car and ended up hurting the motor and not getting in, but you know, I get up what I thought was really early, thinking that I'd be up there early so I'd, you know, have a good shot to get that top, you know, 20, 30 pairs like we just talked about. But, man, I think this year with that kind of weather forecast for Indy, if it stays true, I mean, you may as well just go down there the night before and sleep in the lanes.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing to see 30, 40 cars trying to hustle up there at the back of the staging lanes at 6:30, you know, for a 8 o'clock hit.
Yeah, I was. I mean, we got up at I think 6:30 and put the ice on and stuff, thinking that we were ready. Until man, we were way back in line, and there was guys in the back fighting over which lane they were in, and it was an interesting experience for sure.
Yeah,
Charlie and I, we've been very fortunate with having cars that are pretty solid index wise. So our cars are back in the pits, and we're going up there and watching that circus go down before we even bring our cars up. So. Yeah, watching that firsthand can be kind of crazy because, you know, we're back laying back with stuff, you know, that at times can go, you know, 150 under plus. So we
and,
were...
and it's a fine line, too, depending on what kind of car you got. I mean, you know, I've seen where the first five pair, you know, if you got a car that's an AB or an A stick car or even C and D, I've seen guys blow the tires off because there's no heat in the track yet. So there's a fine line between... You know, you want to be somewhere around that 8th to 15th pair. So,
all right. So let's jump back to Bowling Green real quick. The one last thing I wanted to touch on is something that I know Charlie was a little bit excited about. But you know, Bowling Green announced that they were going to raise their entry fee. All of the Division III races are 170 currently. They announced they were going to raise theirs to 180, supposedly to the excuse or the rationale is to pay for a Kentucky sales tax that Dallas has to pay down there. And I know on Facebook, it just exploded, and there was, lots of local Kentucky guys defending Bowling Green because they love it. But I was surprised how many people were really, really upset with this $10 hike. What do you guys think about it?
It's just one more poke in the ass for all of us, you know. I mean, we started off, you know, the payouts are the same, and it was 125. Then it was 135. Then it went to 150. Then it went to 155. Then 165. Then 170. Now, you know, we've set the precedence again. Now it's 180. And we're still, you know, at the same payout we were at $1.25. Now, I understand costs have gone up, you know, taxes, whatever, cost of doing business. But don't you think any of our costs have gone up? You know, fuel, engines, race gas, you know, hotels. I mean, why does a sportsman racer always got to take it on the chin? You know, I mean, yeah, the taxes went up, but guess what? The taxes are the same as they are in Illinois, Michigan, and Ohio when the entries were also $170. So it's just total BS, you know. I mean, yeah, okay, they went from 5.5 to 6 or whatever the number was, but it's just, once again, you know, just milk the sportsman guy for another $10. He'll pay it because he's a fucking idiot. You know, and we are. You know, it's like, you know, Brad Pillard told me, well, if you don't like it, don't race. Well, that's great. You know, I mean, if I could stop, you know, I would. You know, along with everybody else. If I didn't have to run another points meet in the world and I go to national events, I would stop in a heartbeat. You know, because they're a joke. They really are. You go there, you waste 3-4 days, and you race for $1,000 and $500 worth of contingency. You know, I can go to Milan Dragway, get $40, and race for $800, and I can sleep in my own bed at night. You know. But it's the people that we're all around. It's going and seeing, you know, the guys from Kentucky, the guys from Ohio, maybe guys from up, you know, north or south are going to Bowling Green. That's the whole reason we go to these points meets. And every time we turn around, it just gets packed a little tighter. You know, pretty soon, you watch, I'll guarantee next year it'll be, you know, there'll be some other kind of increase. It'll be closer to $200. And now we're going to pay $200 to race these points meets and race for $1,000 or $1,200. Or they'll raise it all to $200. And they'll increase the payouts, you know, $100. It'll be now $1,200 to win instead of a grand. Oh, well, thanks, guys. That really helps. You know, that's my two cents. It just irritates me because every time we turn out, it's just this nickel and dime, you know, $5 here, $10 here, you know. It's never, you know, supposedly a bunch of, you know, division directors went to NHRA and said, hey, why don't we increase the cost and increase the purse. You know, it's double the purse and make all the points meets $225 better. But we're going to pay $2,000 to win and $1,000 to runner-up. NHRA said, no, we can't do that. That means that they'll pay out more for a points meet than a national event. So they shot all these directors down that went to do this. I mean, the whole thing is it's just a joke. And here we are. There'll be 128 stockers at Bowling Green. There'll be 110 super stockers, and right now Indy's got 160 cars, and it's full in both fields. You know, look at Maple Grove, 55 cars in stock and super stock on the entry list. You know, it's full. You had to go to five of these worthless points meets in order to go to Maple Grove if you live, you know, within 2 hours there. It's your closest national event. You know,
you had to fight to get in, too, on top of it.
Yeah. Correct.
The five that got in was a fight at the last second.
Correct. You need 20 guys fighting for 3 spots.
Yeah, for sure. How much are points meets in Division 7?
170.
Okay, so the same 170. Because I know somebody had commented that in, I think, Division 6, they were already 180 or 185 or something.
Yeah,
so.
They're 165 in Division 5.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a little cost increase, but I kind of think it should be the same for every division. I'm not sure why a track would get to, you know, kind of increase just theirs. But I agree, you know, there'll be a ton of cars. You know, Bowling Green always gets it. Bowling Green is not always the funnest race of the year just because of the heat normally, because it can be pretty sickening. But I will tell you from what Charlie had said and Paul, you know, from hanging out and seeing a bunch of racers that you don't normally see, guys coming from the West. You know, I know last year when we were Bowling Green, there was a ton of guys from the West Coast that came to run before going to Indy. And that was cool to see some new cars, see some guys you don't race with. You know, I think it's always pretty cool when there's, you know, we've had a few times this year, last couple of years, you know, the car count's been very good at the points meets. And when there's a bump spot in qualifying at stock limit or the points meet, that's always pretty cool to me that they get that kind of turnout. So, but at the same time, I do agree with a lot of the points you just made, Charlie. I went to our local track here in Ohio, Quaker City Motorsports Park, had a 5,000, 10,000, 5,000, 3-day race this past weekend. And I went and made and drove a dragster and made 25 runs over 3 days. And, you know, I was talking with Marco Baruzzi. You know, he's a pretty big name bracket, super class racer, top sportsman world champ, top dragster world champ. And he was there, and he said, man, isn't this way better than racing stock and super stock and NHRA? And he's kind of down on it right now. And I said, you know, it was a lot of fun, but it was different, you know. I mean, I was sore by the end of the weekend because I'd made so many runs. But it was fun. It was a different fun. So, you know, I'm glad I did it. Would I want to do that all the time? You know, I don't know about that. I do kind of miss some of the other parts of it, for sure. So, but a good experience. And I know that, you know, some of the big dollar bracket racing is really taking over and becoming very, very popular. So it was kind of good for me to see a little bit of both sides of it.
What was your entry fee for that deal, Aaron?
So it was $300. And you got to race for 5,000 to win Friday, 10,000 to race or to win Saturday, and 5,000 to win on Sunday. It was pretty cool, though. Some different, but yeah, I don't know.
I guess it's time to move to the hot topic of the day. I'm thinking we're going to
absolutely
we're going to get on to teardown.
Okay,
this is something that, I mean, Charlie and I will bend your ear over. We'll have to cut this short because we're pretty opinionated on this deal, all this fear of teardown. And I think on class races, they're running with the wrong idea of what NHRA is driving at. I think you had a deal at a D3 race where somebody was protested and basically started pulling the card that I don't have tools, gaskets, and whatever else. I believe that's more of what the target is. It doesn't say anything about Indy. It doesn't. It just says be prepared to be tore down.
Yeah, let me read the announcement that went out. I'll summarize. I'll skip parts of it, but it's a moving forward. The NHRA Technical Services Department would like to remind all sports and racers to be prepared for teardown when attending an NHRA national event. All racers should bring any and all necessary tools and/or equipment, as well as any and all necessary parts and components, to complete a full teardown and reassembly prior to further competition. Thank you in advance. Look forward to seeing you at the national event.
First off, if you run stock and super stock and you have to be told that, you probably should go around bracket one. You know.
Well, but I think to be fair, Charlie, I mean, they have been so lax the last couple of years that
Aaron, they've been lax on a few people. I mean, I've been tore down more at Indy in the last decade than anybody. I mean, granted, I asked for it. You know, you go number one, you're going to get that special prize. But, I mean,
outside of Indy, Paul, they really haven't torn too many people down.
It's got, and I'd say in the last 4 years, it's gotten pretty lax. 13, I got it 3 times in 13, which is pretty stout. Different cars. You know, and of course, I'm asking for it across the way because, you know, I got the stick combo I got nailed at Vegas. They popped a bunch of us pretty late at night. I mean, one person did get out of that teardown, but I remember it was me, Scott Burton, and Leo Glassbender. We all got popped at 6 o'clock at night. And after they got done checking us, the NHRA guys just bailed. And luckily, they left the lights on so that we could put the car back together. But it, there needs to be more of that. I mean, people need to be held accountable. I don't understand, you know, I mean, they say there's a new sheriff in town, a lot of other things going on, but cars need to get tore down, and they need to be a little more random. You know, I mean, picking the guys that come places and go fast all the time, I mean, like picking me, you know I'm going to subject myself to it. I mean, Charlie has a really great story. I think it was in, was it 15 at Indy? It was maybe it was 16, 15 or 16 anyway. We all got up Friday and we were having a blast thinking, oh, this is great. Nobody got popped. And all of a sudden they're calling for me on the PA at like 11 o'clock in the morning and trying to figure out what this is. And they're calling for a couple of us. I was advised by some people, maybe I should go take a long break and go eat lunch and not come back for 6 hours, but which one of these guys that I'm looking for did. But I subjected myself to it, went to tear down at 2 o'clock and got popped. But I would like to see it become more random and not just popping the same guys all the time. I mean, that part, the way it used to go, needs to come back into full effect. But I know Charlie's laughing because the story is kind of funny, but.
Well, especially when they came over and you were sitting in the car and they looked right at you and couldn't find you.
Yeah, I was sitting in the wrong car. We're still debating on whether I was going to go tear down or not, but, you know, because coming to look for me that morning, I thought was kind of a little.
Bob voted to go to DQ for lunch at that time, but he was overruled.
So, but yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you guys got an opinion, and like I said, I know that whole deal that went down at D3 with the Mopar just refusing. I mean, I talked to some other D3 guys on the phone after that happened, and I would load up and say, I'll see you next year. I mean, I knew that was, in my opinion, that's what I was going to get. If I said no, see you in a year and come back apart. There would be no ifs, ands, or buts about that. I mean, that's just the way that ball bounces. So,
yeah. Well, and I think, you know, if you knew you were illegal, I guess it'd be the thing to do, right? I mean, just leave. Why even waste your time tearing down, you know? You're going to get a year anyway, so save yourself. Put some ambiguity into it.
Craig, you can come up with a bullshit story like, you know, I didn't have my tools or it was too late or, you know, one of my favorites is a family member died. I think there was a guy in India about 20 years ago and he may have been from Canada and he was picked for teardown and all of a sudden he had a death in the family and he had to vacate the premises at a high rate of speed. So there's been some good excuses, but everybody always gets a year suspension, you know.
Right. So, yeah, so I think that's kind of the first announcement. And I think you're right, Paul. I think it was to kind of clarify some stuff that's happened, but also to kind of say, hey, you know, maybe we're going to change some of this stuff. So, you know, I think that was interesting. I agree some of the stuff on Class Racer was a little bit different. But I think the bigger kind of announcement, I think the bigger, I'll say, controversial thing, and you guys probably know way more about it than I do, because you guys focus a little more on this side of racing, but this new CNC digital head machine.
Yeah, this digitizer, actual like scanner of a cylinder head. You start off, Charlie, but I got some opinions on this too.
I don't. Digitizer doesn't do anything for cars that are, you know, over 25 years old. I mean, you can take three castings, you know, say 305 Chevrolet, put them in that digitizer, they could be unmolested, you know, right out of the box. They're all going to read different because they're sand cast stuff. You know, this is moved or that's moved. Or, you know, you take a CNC head like on my Mustang, that's a totally different story. So I don't see how you can take a 1969 350, 255 head, other than just looking at it and seeing what's going on, how can you know, you got core shift, you've got everything else, okay, so it doesn't match this one there. What does that mean? You know, if you take a CNC head from Ford, that, hey, we made 2,500 of these, this dude better be within 1% of the thing we got on the shelf. You know, that's what this is for, I think, is basically factory showdown cars and, you know, 2008 and newer stuff, I think, is where this CNC machine or digitizer, that's where it's really going to come into effect. Because we've got some guys doing some stuff and moving this, and especially in the factory showdown, you know, where that's, you know, high dollar and this and that. I know a couple guys have already been told that, you know, hey, you know, your heads are junk for Factory Showdown. Don't even bring them. You know, we'll get you some new ones. So at the tune of, you know, $15,000-$16,000, I know there was a few guys that were a little upset with that. So I don't see it being a huge. I don't see it being a huge deal. Everybody, you know, what I see being a bigger deal though is if I'm somebody like Stanfield or, you know, the Rose or a give me another cylinderhead guy. I'm drawing a blank in Division One. Kielberg or who's the other cylinder? He used to be part of the Kielberg. Now I'm drawing a blank.
Gary Hetler.
Yeah, Gary Hetler. Jesus, thank you. You know, if I got a set of super stock heads and they go through and digitize these things, and you've got, let's say, this tech guy looking at them, that tech guy looking at them, you know, who's to say I'm from Division Four and, you know, I got a buddy that's got a super stocker. I know this engine builder and, you know, Stanfield stuff is a 10th fashion everybody else. But we got this digitizer here that shows exactly what your heads are. You know, who's to say that these tech guys aren't going to, you know, sell this information to somebody else? I mean, I know it's a real long shot, but if I'm in the cylinder head business, you know, I don't want people seeing what I'm doing on a super stock head. I mean, you can pretty much do anything to a super stock head, correct, as long as the numbers are all correct?
That's correct.
As long as the chambers are so.
Check. I mean, no modifications can be openly clear to the eye. They just have to pass CC chambers, so that's it, yeah.
Correct. So, but I mean, but I would be, if I had a lot of high, if I was a high-end super stock cylinder head guy, I would be more worried about, you know, like Jeff Donut's car. There's a ton of LT1 cars out there. I would be worried about somebody getting a hold of my stuff that I've R&D'd and it getting into the wrong hands because, let's say, the Division 5 tech director, he talks to the Division 3 tech director, talks to Division 2. Well, now you've got this drawing here that's out. Maybe they did a print off of it or this or that. This thing spread around throughout 6 or 7 people. Maybe it gets into the wrong hands, and now all of a sudden you got Joe Blow Johnson's cylinder head shop that doesn't even do super stock heads. He can put that in a machine and copy it, you know?
Yeah, and I can't agree more about the cast heads. You know, I've been at this 30 years almost now, so, I mean, we're at a point where, actually over, I used to send, you think about how many castings we would send in to a cylinder head guy. I mean, I remember sending as many as 10 cylinder heads to get two. They were that different from the fact that it's not going to happen with the cast heads. The question where this may come into play, and I have a set of Edelbrock heads on my wife's Barracuda. The Edelbrock heads are a disaster. You know, you have to just take these things, and the CCs are so far off, you have to take them to, like, the butcher shop, and then you can even get close. So I don't know how that's going to work there. You know, those are cast heads too, and I do gather there is a core shift with Edelbrock stuff. But
anybody that runs an aftermarket head, whether it's a big block Chevy head, the Mopar head, you know, any approved head that's a super stock and stock approved head, they're always, you got to butcher every one of them to make them work in stock. So anybody that's got that, that would be my concern, is anybody with an aftermarket head and stock eliminator.
And so, yeah, I'm a little, I can't wait to see how that plays out. You know, with the aftermarket aluminum cylinder heads, you know, when they go and see, well,
right.
Geez.
I'm gonna tell you right now, this is how it's going to work out. Nobody's going to know how to run that machine. So they're going to have somebody there that, you know, they had to hire or whatever. And they're going to be able to do about 6 of them in a day, because it's going to be a total CF.
Oh,
and
yeah, 100%.
The only reason they bought that machine is for the Factory Showdown stuff. So at the end of the day, everybody's all worked up over this machine. They're probably going to check 2 heads in stock and 2 heads in super stock, and that's going to be it. And then they're not going to know what to do. That's my prediction, if they even check any.
I do think, you know, if we want to keep moving this along, I think based on this, we're going to see some more teardowns at Indy. It's gotten a little more of a lonely place. I've been there a lot over the last decade. last couple years in a row, as a matter of fact, and I think it won't be such a lonely thing. I mean, the first year, time I got popped there, I mean, it was two full sessions, and you know, there was stress everywhere. It was, and that's the way it should be. It made it fun. I mean,
I think you're gonna see two sessions of 10 in stock and super stock. You're gonna see 20 stockers go down, 20 super stock. That's my opinion. Because I think last year it was what, a session of 6 and a session of 4. So they tore down 10 cars total. Well, plus the 3, the protest fiasco. So 13 cars after that.
Yeah, but they tore what? Yeah. No super stockers down, right?
I think they pumped a few, and I think they tore down 2. I think they tore down the Hemi cars.
Yeah, it was pretty light with the superstars.
It was pretty weak, yes.
Yeah, I would think that, I agree, they probably got this machine, especially with the factory cars, some of the newer stuff. And I would think that it'll be more of an information gathering session to start with.
And to be honest, a lot of it's going to depend on, there's a pretty good rumor that one of the millionaires has brought $30,000 and he's tearing down every factory showdown car. Now, whether they let him do it or not is going to be another story. But that may, if that goes down, that may play in. There may not be any stock super stocks if they have to tear down 28 or 30 factory showdown cars. Because the person that's talking about it definitely has the coin to do it. And basically just for principle, no other reason.
Is this person a competitor in factory stock?
Oh, yeah. Correct, yes.
That's interesting.
So, but I don't know the rules. I don't know if you can only tear down one person or if you can tear down a fleet of people. I don't know how that whole deal works. I know you can't tear anybody down after eliminations have started.
I don't know. No matter how much money you are, I don't see them letting you tear everybody down.
I think that'd be a bad precedent. But they might take the money.
Yeah. You got to remember, NHRA keeps 10%, so what the hell?
But, yeah, I do see, though, I think the amount of teardowns is going to be a little reminiscent of time gone by, and I think that's going to be a little bit better. I think people are going to be.
But the biggest thing is, who are they going to tear down? Are they going to, you know, how many times are you going to tear down Caleb McFarland? How many times are you going to tear down the Chinaman's pickup truck? I mean, we go to teardown and we see, you know, okay, we've got a couple new cars that are going to pass. You know, we've got a car that's been in tear. I mean, how many times is that A-stick LS1 car been in there? 6 times at Indy?
Yeah, a lot.
You know, I mean, how many times are you going to take Donnie Beeler? I mean, you know, you look in that teardown barn and half the people, it's like, well, they were here 2 years ago. And then you go through the fields and you see a guy qualified, you know, 105, 110. He's always in that, you know, bubble bump era. He's come to Indy the last 10 years and they don't screw with him. You know, those are the cars that I want to see coming to. I want to see the guy that qualifies 128. I want to see the guy qualify 115. I want to see the guy qualify 95. You know, the guy sandbagging in the weeds that maybe have, you know, taken a chance, rolled the dice. Maybe they know they're not going to win class. You know, there's a lot. I still think there's a lot of cars at Indy that are not class winning cars that qualify in that bottom 30 to 40 cars that are not legit because they've gone through the last 5-6 years. Teardown's been lax. You know, they say, well, we're just going to roll that dice. And, you know, they're only tearing down 10 cars, so I'm probably not going to win class. They're not going to tear me down. I'm going to go to Indy and just race. So, that's the car you should be tearing down.
You go back to the early 2000s, and, I mean, they were popping. They were popping people like that all over the board.
Correct.
Especially
in super stock, they would catch 2 or 3 guys with a bogus crankshaft or, you know, CCs were, you know, 10 CCs off or 5 CCs. They would catch stuff like that. You know, guys that were just pushing the envelope trying to get in. So.
And I think that keeps people a lot more responsible and accountable for what's going on when you do things like that.
Correct.
You know. And moving on to that, I don't know where the bump spot's going to be. The weather is this. You know, if it hangs where it is, it's best weather there in 10 years.
If it hangs where it is, it's going to be 93 to 95. If it's your average year, I would say it's going to be 89, 90, right around there.
You know, the 160 thing kind of, you know, cutting down that 10, 15 cars may make that bump spot a little softer, I'm thinking.
Correct. And if you look, there's some soft cars. There's 15 or so cars that are, you know, 8 to 8,500 cars. I was going through it, and unless those people have put together a new engine program in the last 3 weeks, you know, I can go through there and pretty easily pick out 15 to 20 cars that I know aren't getting in.
Yeah, their DNQs just across the board.
Right. And it seems like that they're every year, right? There's always some guys that come to Indy to try to qualify, and you know they really don't have a chance. It kind of baffles me why they go, but I think they just go for the experience.
But when you limit it to 160,
yeah,
and these guys get in because they got a lot of grade points, then you know that what that did was that took. You know, I'm not saying last year I think we had 171. You know, we may get close to that again, but you know it may limit down the situation a little more, where you get a spot where it let in 10 more cars that aren't going to make it no matter what anyway.
What about
there's a couple guys that that had some fast cars that just didn't get in because they didn't realize it was going to fill up at a grade three. You know, I know a couple Superstock guys. I know Don O'Malley didn't realize in Superstock it filled up, and he's kind of sitting there on the spot waiting for a spot right now. But he's got a car that would qualify in Superstock pretty easy, I think. So
yeah,
there's a few of those out there too.
I would think after Bowling Green, after some test sessions, there'll be some guys didn't get their stuff back together, et cetera. I would think there'll be some musical chairs with the entry list.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've seen it in the last week. There's been, two people would drop, one would enter, two would drop, one would enter. You know, World Champ would get in, So I think it's going to change.
Let me ask you guys one more question. Do you think that with the email that NHRA sent out about being prepared for teardown, and the news about this new machine, do you think that will affect the bump squad at all?
No.
Because I think anybody within reason realizes this machine and a cast head, which is probably, you're looking at, three-quarters of the field, it's just not going to have an effect on them.
I
said, it was like when they started, before they established CC runners for stalkers, I remember when I was tearing down for records 15 years ago, and they started CCing the runners, and I was like, "What are you doing this for?" And they were on a number expedition to establish those numbers and figure out what those numbers are. I wouldn't be surprised you see this digitizer go through a lot of cylinder heads with them experimenting, trying to figure out what they can figure out.
Yeah, for sure.
Are they going to throw you out for it? You know, you got a CNC head, you probably better be spot on. Other than that, I don't see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the rumor on the street is you got to be within whatever the CNC head, because NHRA has all these heads, the 302, the Mopar head, the Chevrolet head. They've got basically a warehouse, all these heads. And supposedly they went through and digitized all these heads. And, you got to be within, I heard anywhere from 0.5% to 1.5% on the deal when it goes through and reads your head, in factory showdown or a new car. If you're not within that tolerance that they've got there, that hasn't been published, they're going to give you the boot.
Yeah, and that digitizer now, what it's looking for is expensive work, the moving of the port and how the port's been moved. That's what they're looking for. They're not worried about size or anything. They want to see how the short-turn radius behind the valve's been moved, what's been moved where, and this is what they're hunting for now.
And this
is where you get into – people are like, "Oh, this will make heads cheaper." Right. It's going to make them even more expensive because now they're going to hunt for that, that where that 1% tolerance is that actually makes the most power. I mean, that whole quest is going to become a different thing if it plays out like that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, I think we've kind of talked about the teardown thing a little bit. You guys got some numbers on that you called out. Let's talk a little bit more about Indy itself. We talked about the bump spot, so I'm going to put you on the spot, guys. Charlie, stock eliminator, what's the bump spot going to be?
92.7.
Paul?
The weather's going to be good. I think it's going to be 93, 94 under. I would say 93, 94. 93. I'll go 93.
Okay. I'm going to say 91.
What the weather's gonna,
the weather.
And you got these shootouts going on. Be interesting to see how that plays out. You're looking at a stick. I know we were gonna move on to looking at that. Caleb's kind of like he's still the cream of the crop. That LS1 still got a fairly good factor on it.
Until Randy Manns proves to me that he's going to get down the track and compete with him, he's had some clutch problems. Caleb's still the car to beat. He won that thing, what, 5 years? I mean, they go from point A to point B. He very rarely makes a mistake, and if he does, it's a red light on his own part. I think he red-lighted 1 year, and Joe Martin's won it. I mean, if it's not for a mistake that he makes in the driver's seat, he wins again. I don't see – I'm looking there. There's some cars that will run 10-0s, 10-teens, maybe somebody will tickle 999. But Caleb's got a car that can go 980s at Indy, you know, if he wants.
I tend to agree. I mean, we parked beside him at the Points Meet Indy in July, and they definitely were having some clutch problems with that car. So hopefully they got that sorted around. I think I would agree that Randy Manns probably has the power to run with Caleb. I think they've shown that when that car was an automatic, it was one of the faster, you know, LS automatic cars out there. So.
And I think in their guy, those guys have been struggling with the clutch. I know they've had Brad helping them, and you know Mike, they've been really thrashing on that thing trying to get ready. When those guys hit on the setup, and they will, I think
it'll be fast.
Look out, because that's probably going to be the car to beat when they hit that setup. And hopefully they can do it in time for Indy. I know they're working on some new stuff and they're doing some testing. Caleb's going to have his handful against that car. So,
I think it's going to be one of those two cars. I don't think any of the six first gen Camaros can really run with those guys. It'll be their race to win.
Unless somebody takes Jimmy Boudreaux's motor and sticks in one of them, you know.
All right, what do you guys think about A-Stock Automatic, more on the automatic side?
I mean, you still got Steve Wan. He's the cream of the crop. That car is just a rocket. But
yeah,
the unknown I want to see is when we get one of these 376 Camaros up in there. Bobby Brandon's listed in A-Automatic. We'll see what those things got. Everybody's claimed they've had 940s in them. You know, Steve's going to be good for solid 970 and A-Automatic. Let's see if those new Camaros can truly – now, they took a little power, but, you know, they claim they can go 940s. If they can do it, they're going to take him out. But now
– I think Marion Stevenson, he's, you know, could jump into A if he wanted. I know Jeff Taylor last year showed up with the 376 motor. I don't know that he's doing that again. One of those cars definitely could jump into A and I think do some damage, but I think Paul's right. If none of the new style 15 Camaros jump in, I think it's probably the Mopar.
No, I would agree to that. You know, Jim Nichols is bringing that car. I know they're at Barton's right now, freshening that thing up. If they stick that into A, it could give them a run for its money. He's run some good numbers in double A, you know. The index is tougher in double A, so they'll probably run it in A, I would think there. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he went a high 980 in A, maybe an 85. You know, he's got good power. Dave's got that thing running. You know, when Jim Bailey had it, it made good power. That's a car that, you know, could be kind of laying in the weeds that, you know, if Steve has a 130 light and Nichols is always normally pretty good on the tree.
Yep.
You know, it could sneak up and bite them, you know, on a whole shot.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think, you know, some of the Camaros could maybe get within, you know, striking distance if, you know, one of the other guys has a little bit of an issue or, you know, spins a tire a tad or something like that. So it'd always be interesting to see. What about Superstock A Hemi? That's always one of the picked ones. We talked a little bit off air about this class, and I agree. It seems to have lost a little bit the last couple of years.
It's the Jimmy Daniels and Camilla show, as far as I'm concerned. Those are the two premier cars anymore. You know, Charlie's out of it. You know, Bucky's kind of been out of it. He's not driving near like he was 10 years ago. I mean, not driving, but, I mean, just engine program is not, you know, he used to just live, eat, breathe that stuff, and he hasn't the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, Barton's kind of focused on the factory shootout.
Correct. You know, in Jimmy's car will run there. You know, Camello will probably run his Cuda there, you know, with a stick. You know, I know those guys have fought that in the past. It's laid down some good numbers. But there's really not – if you go back and look at that A Hemi deal, you know, 5-6 years ago, there was 7-8 guys at the top of that thing.
Yeah.
You know, they were all, you know, within a nickel. You know, you had Walkowitz and Westcott and Camello and Daniels and – you know, you had that Gus from Canada that went to the finals. I mean, there was a lot of guys that were close. And like last year, I think there were three guys at the top of the pack, and everybody was 1,500 behind or more.
Yeah. And there was people just pouring money in.
Guys on the West Coast out there.
The whole Harry Holton crew, I mean, it's just pouring seven figures into this deal like it's nothing. You know, and it was tight, and there was but the thing is, we'll see. There is a lot of AH cars entered, and I mean a lot. Maybe it'll come back within reason, and those guys will be able to fight, you know, at a level which maybe it'll be more fun. You know, it'll get, you know, that top level, Uber level money out of there and get more into the grassroots of you know, those cars. And you may see it become more tight. It may be tighter than we think. And looking at that list, it's not real easy to pick. You may see some really good racing.
Those cars are
kind of fragile, too. That's the other
thing. Well, yeah, exactly. You got to remember, you got to make probably, what, seven runs to win class after qualifying in all of class. So, you know, it's hard to do that when those cars are on kill.
No, I would agree. You know, and they gave those guys a dime back on index, so now they can –
I mean, there's 20 of those cars. So, I mean, it's pretty cool.
That's a five-round race.
Yeah. It's get down on it. There's a lot going on.
But you really look at those 20 cars, and you can write eight or nine of them off right away.
Yeah,
you know, you've always been able to do that. But the problem is, to make a decision, I'm looking at eight, nine cars. And that's pretty cool when you can do that and say, I'm not sure. Well, looks like there's going to be some racing on your hands. You know, that's what's going to make it cool.
There's three cars in the top still. You know, Wolkowitz, Daniels, and Camella. Those guys are, in my opinion, they're the only ones that have stayed on that class and continue to work and spend money. I don't see anybody but one of those three winning. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, I would say the one that I don't know is, and not going to take a West Coast guy, but Eric Bell with Eric Jones Power, I don't know. That's an unknown. I mean, it may fly, it may not. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, because getting into, like, I know we were going to talk about Super J Automatic. You know, Larry Zavala, he's kind of throwing the gauntlet down. He's the one to shoot for.
Yeah, but he's not coming in because they broke a crankshaft, supposedly.
Oh, did they?
I don't think he's on the list.
He is not on the list. I just –
the list just changed. He's off, huh?
Yeah.
So I don't know if – is Lincoln on the list or not?
Lincoln is on the list, yes.
Yeah, Lincoln's still got – if Zavala's not there, Lincoln's got the car to beat, and then Tyler Bohannon in second, I would say.
Yeah, Zavala's off the list. So yeah,
Zavala's off the list. Yeah.
That car is fast when it's right.
Yeah, I think Lincoln's got a chance.
Machine.
I'll throw one more in there. Bellinger made a run at the Indy Points meet at 4,500 feet that was mighty impressive as well. So he might be able to throw his hat in there.
He's got a family and support system around him of people that make stuff fly. So, yeah, I wouldn't count him out either. You know, and coming from that area of the country, you've got a couple of LT1 super stalkers that get with it in that area. I mean, you know, between Jeff Dona and Ricky Decker, I mean, you've got – those cars are bad players.
Yeah, but those guys are going to go to G&H. They're not going to.
They're going to H&I. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll stay away from all that nonsense.
They don't. They don't want all that rigmarole.
All right. So we talked about all the class. Charlie, give us a little rumor mill update on the factory showdown teardown. Any other rumor mills coming into the Indy race?
I don't know. I think the big speculation on everybody's part is. How many cars are they going to pop for teardown? You know, it's one of those things. I think that's going to be the big speculation of the week to see what that is. That will be the game changer to see what happens. If Wesley truly is showing up, I mean, he's a guy that commands a lot of respect. You get him and Travis and a couple of those guys together, and they're, you know, I've been tore down by those guys and watching them. And, you know, people like Wesley, they don't go back and look at a book. He just spouts out what the number's supposed to be, and he knows what he's looking at. I think he's getting up on the new cars and getting a little more knowledge with those. They need to get some more of these tech guys that understand more of the new cars, because I think there's some stuff in there that they're not quite as familiar with, but I think as time wears on, they're getting more familiar, and they're going to get after it pretty good.
Yeah, it's all going to come down to how much money NHRA is going to let them spend. you know. I mean, last year they had, what, three guys? You had Dave Lay and two other guys doing teardown.
Yeah, and I mean, Bruce Buchhalter, he made his reappearance there because, I mean, he was on me pretty hard last year, a couple of debates over.
Bruce is done. I mean, I think
he's in the twilight of the career with all that.
Correct. I mean, he was there, but really, what was he doing other than sitting in a chair? He checked some carburetors. I mean, it's like when Valentine was around, you know, he was checking carburetors and he couldn't even read the damn thing half the time.
Yeah. And looking at stock, I think Bill Dyer is finally going to get his chance to be number one qualifier. I think that if I was a betting man, I think he's going to be number one this year.
So that's the other question is nobody's really been able to answer. You know, normally by now they've made an announcement, you know, that, you know, Indy's a free-for-all. And I haven't seen anything, you know. There was rumor last year that, you know, it was going to be a free-for-all, but anything over 120 was going to count for automatic horsepower. Then they went back and said, no, Indy's going to be a free-for-all. And then they said, no, it's going to be 120. Nobody's been able to answer that question. So that's kind of, you know, here we are basically less than a week away. And I haven't heard anybody that definitely, because remember last year we were talking about it, and we said, well, that would be the last time anybody goes, you know, 2 seconds under or 180 under at Indy, because they're going to reinstitute the 120 under deal. Because, yeah, I mean, basically, you went 2 seconds under with no penalty.
Yeah. You know,
everybody was pissed because it shows up one time, same as Dyer. I mean,
yeah, if there's ever a place,
in my opinion, if there's ever a place where 120 should be in effect, it's Indy. I mean, you know, for guys to go out and run 130 under and then the guy that runs 110 under in class gets beat by 2/10, I mean, what does it prove? You know,
yeah, I actually agree with that rule.
It's a dumb rule. Pat came up with this because Division One and everybody else that's got all this fast cars, everybody's wanting an advantage so they could go to Indy with their 130, 140 under cars, win class without a penalty. It's total BS. You know, that should have never been allowed to happen from day one.
You know? I mean, you got to remember, we went there in 12. I knew I was taking a minimum 10% horsepower.
That's my point.
We were going to be number one no matter what, and we made the decision we were going to take 10% horsepower because we were going to bury everybody at 12. And
correct.
I went out there and took my lick like a big boy and took, I think, 12% horsepower. It was just, but yeah, you want to be number one at Indy, that was the cost. And that's
correct.
always been the cost.
Correct. And now, the last 2 years, it's just been a free-for-all. You know, you got a couple cars, 160, 180, 2 seconds. I mean, it's, in honesty, it's made a mockery of the whole number one qualifier at Indy deal.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And I mean, I know I'm part of it, you know, but I saw something and, I know some people took advantage of a system.
That's all you did.
I know some people don't, you know, they even my buddy, the Flying Hawaiian, thinks that, you know, a QRT, you know, V car is not a real race car, but, you know, those cars that we've shown up with there in number one qualified are built. You know, they're not built any different than anybody's F or G car, I'll tell you that much, to go that fast. But bottom line of the matter is, you know, to be number one qualifier at Indy, I mean, there's been some junkers do it, but in recent times I haven't seen much junk at the top of the list. I mean, the stuff's been worked on pretty hard. I mean, you know, even you look at Gary Summers, you know, people laugh, oh, the engine's grimy, but, you know, that guy goes through the process of sciencing out and looking at stuff, and he still works plenty hard. People don't, you know, they underestimate a farmer as to how hard he works on his stuff. So, you know, he goes through and plans and plots and comes up with things pretty scientifically. It may not look it, but they do.
Yeah, I'll admit, I was impressed when you pulled the head off the El Camino. I didn't really think it was going to be that nice. So, it had some nice aftermarket pistons and good rings.
I mean, you want to go that fast. That's the idea. I mean, if you're going to exploit the system, might as well do it the right way, not half-assed.
Correct.
So let me ask you guys a couple more quick questions here, put you on the spot. Once you guys, all three of us pick a winner from Indy and the Eliminator. You first, Charlie. Stock.
Oh, man. Well, I'd like to pick myself, but my driving's been really shitty the last month, so I'm going to pass on that.
Okay.
Let's see here. I'm going to pick, because, see, nobody, like, guys that are top 10, top 15 drivers, they hardly ever win Indy. It's always somebody in the weeds, you know. It's
yep.
You know, somebody you don't think about. It. You know, Mike McGinley got to the final a couple years ago. Dave Walter won it a long time ago. I mean, good drivers, but not like, you know, not like your, those guys wouldn't be in your tricky tipster, you know, that used to come out.
Yeah, it's an interesting
mix of people. Because guys that win a lot of races come to Indy, and they've got to turn their car up, and it's not the way they drive their car.
Right, and
you
the
know,
other
now
thing
their
I've
car's turned up, and they're not in the same wheelhouse anymore. All of a sudden, you know, they're driving their car in, you know, heads-up mode the whole way.
You know, and the other thing is you'll get a guy that, you know, is maybe a below-average driver, and he'll run somebody like a, you know, a Pete Biondo or a Joe Santangelo, and the guy will be, you know, 002, dead on four, taking a tenth and a half stripe for the win. You know, I don't know how many times we've looked at Indy the first two rounds, and it's like, well, how did he lose? You look, and it's like, oh, well, the guy just 10-2 drove it through and was 00 and dead on his dial, and, you know, was, you know, he was just in the way. So, I mean, there's always a lot of that the first two rounds, you know. You look, and it's like, you know, how did these five guys lose? I mean, that guy should win that round 10 out of 10 times.
Well, to be fair, I mean, it's a marathon of a race. I mean –
Correct.
Most people have been away from home. A lot of people go to Bowling Green, go straight there. I mean, you know, 10 days, sleeping in a trailer or motorhome or even a hotel. I mean, it's not easy, let alone getting up at 6 a.m. and then going to bed late. So you know, it's not for the faint of heart for sure. Okay, Charlie, so on the spot, who's your winner?
Who's my winner in stock?
Yeah, I'll go out on a long shot. I got somebody that's not under the pressure of driving a pro car right now. I would like to try to pick Drew Skillman. He's coming from behind. He's giving everybody a head start.
Home track.
Know, winning on the home track is a big thing to him, and I think he's going to be in his own zone because they're going to run that car just how it is. That's my call.
That's a guy. I'm gonna say Todd Hovind, man. He's won a couple national events, sneaks around. You know, he's one of those guys that he always drives well, but you may not think of him as a, you know, top 10 guy, but he's won a lot of rounds, a lot of races. That Karp car is really good. You know, that's another car that if he puts it in A, could sneak up on Juan there. That's my call right now is Hovind. I think he's a good driver. You know, he's not. You know, he's just kind of that middle of the run. You know, he knows how to win national events. He knows how to go rounds. You know, he doesn't really crack under pressure, and he's driving somebody else's car. So, that's my vote.
Let's see who I want. Man, the guy I was going to pick. I just don't think he can qualify.
Who's that?
Brian Merkel. What do you think? I'm not sure again. I think he's going to be on the edge.
I was looking at that. I think you're right. I thought maybe he was going to drive Bossner's car, but
he is not. What I heard.
Entered, so he's not.
Yeah, I don't know whose car is he driving. Get try to drive
gonna,
his own car.
He's trying to take his own car. Drive,
yeah. And I think he's going to be 89, 90 under. And
he's a great guy, but he's going to come in as
good driver
at his best.
Yeah, I think you're right. I hate to say it because he is a good driver. He's got a good car. It's just that combination has just been beat up so bad in the last 5-10 years.
I'm gonna pick Matt Introbius.
Yeah, Matt's been quiet for a while. That's a solid pick.
He's been quiet, but I think he can solidly get in. I think he's got a pretty good chance at some heads ups. He can. I think he can do the distance, and I go with him. Okay, Superstock, Charlie.
Well, I'm going. Pete's making a comeback. I think he's driving Anthony's car. I think you're either going to see Pete or actually, you know what? I'm gonna scratch that right now. I'm gonna go back here. The magic. I'm gonna tell you right now. I'm going with Ricky Decker. First national event win at Indy. It's just. I think he's
would
so
be a good
overdue.
Story.
It'd be a great story, and you know, I think everybody would get behind. Everybody's behind that guy because they just want to see him win a national event. He's probably one of the better superstock drivers over his career. Just
he is
his
hot right
rides
now.
Made so many times. He's real hot right now. He goes to Bowling Green. He does well there.
You know he's going to qualify at Indy, probably be a good class competitor, you know, and he's as good as anybody. I'm going with Ricky.
Okay, Paul?
You know, that is a really hard call. You know, I think somebody that comes around, older guy that can drive at times, and you watch him just tee off on people, Pete Perry.
Yeah.
You know, his son-in-law won there a few years ago, coming from an alternate spot. For some reason, I think he's lying in the weight. I think he's just, for some reason, he's focused, he's there. If he doesn't get worn out by the Emmons boys, he may be a player.
Yeah, it depends on how hard he's got to work Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, that's our call.
He's got change rear ends or change engines. I mean, that could put a damper on.
He's not a spring chicken. We can all only hope to be in his shape at his age, but he's not a spring chicken. If they wear him out, that'll screw everything up. And at that point, you may be looking for somebody different at that point. But I think he's, for some reason, I just get a feeling he might be due to do something at the Big Go.
Okay. And then I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I'm gonna pick Mark Nowicki.
Wow, how about that?
He's had a tough year.
Yeah.
For personal end, I really hadn't raced a ton.
Yeah, and he's due for something. I mean,
I tell you what, he is a tough competitor. I raced with him for years on the iTRA side.
Yep.
He blinders. And is very good at it. I think he's the type of guy that can get not race much, jump in a car, and do good. He's not going to get rattled. You know, I've never seen a guy get too excited one way or the other. I think he's his approach to racing is pretty good for that race. So I'm going to go with him.
Nice, that's a good pick. I like it.
And he definitely qualifies.
Yeah, I'd say so.
he can
probably be in the top three if he wanted.
Yeah, right.
It depends on what he steps on at this point.
All right, so the last thing, Paul, what are you bringing to Indy? We've not talked about this yet.
I'm actually on the safe side.
Himself?
Got a whole family with me.
He's not bringing shit to Indy. I'm bringing it.
Yeah, I'm bringing some other projects back for me and Charlie. I'm actually driving, coming this way, so I'm bringing some stuff for us to work on. I'm running the pickup truck, calling it safe.
Stick or automatic?
I'm actually going in a mode just to drive. I felt like I drove really well. I made a mistake against Brian Merkel at Norwalk, but before that, I mean, I was able to string lights, and I'd like to see myself go some rounds with the thing, even more so than class there. I'd like to see if I can get myself written, beyond Saturday into Sunday and see if I can make a couple rounds. But, yeah, the truck with the automatic, it's
Hopefully it starts and goes in the trailer on Saturday.
It'll be fine.
All right, awesome. I just want to thank you, Paul, for jumping on the show tonight. Your class racing knowledge from Indy for sure is unprecedented. Any other anything else you want to add? Anything West Coast rumors? Anything from Vegas we need to know about?
The big thing will be our follow-up show after this. There'll probably be lots of topics to talk about after this. We'll have to see where this all plays out.
All right. Well, we got to try to get the Indy winner on here, you know. So, you know, hopefully it's just the three of us again, because that would mean that one of you guys would win. But if not, you know, might have to get somebody else on here.
Sure.
All right. Well, good luck, guys. And I will not be making the trip this year, but maybe
well, Charlie
year,
and
but,
I'll be there. We'll keep you informed.
Yeah, you definitely keep
yep.
me informed.
We got a lot going on. We got Skillman's party. We got the JR1 party that we love. Mike Roth Wagner putting out some good eats, some crack pie. I don't know what the meat selection is this year, but I'm looking forward to that because I do like to eat.
Awesome. And my father and I are actually going to attend the NMCA. I think it's the World Nationals this weekend at Norwalk, Ohio, Norwalk Raceway Park. And they're having a 50th anniversary Copo shootout. So we're going to take the new car and go to that and try something a little different this year. So see how it goes.
So, well, if Big T gets bored, he can come hang out with us at Indy.
We'll accept him.
I'm sure he'll make an appearance. He always finds his way over on Thursday or Friday for a day or two. So I'll go over with him.
Good.
Yeah, maybe I'll sneak over there for a day or two just to watch. But, hey, great talking to you guys. I know it's way past your bedtime, Charlie. It's not as bad, Paul, on the West Coast. And tell your wife I apologize for keeping you from your dinner. But it was great getting you guys on here and talking about the big
sure.
Go in Indy. So.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you here pretty soon.
All right. Sounds
bye,
good, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. See you.
Bye.
That concludes the Class Racing Podcast. Please remember to visit racetoolsdirect.com for all of your tools and equipment needs.